Good morning and welcome to Home Fires Radio. I'm your host, Patty Kostelic. I'd like to read a little something for you this morning to start off. Every now and then, an issue ignites a grassroots spontaneous combustion which fires up the citizenry to action. Such an issue is the impending sale of Creamer's Dairyland that lies between Fairbanks and College, a pleasing pastoral interlude of fields and woods in the creeping urban sprawl that surrounds it, mecca for bird watchers, laced with dog team trails, and serving as a staging area for thousands of ducks, geese, and cranes that stop here during their springtime migration. The prospect of these lands becoming the community eyesore which the last dairy that went out of business turned into, a junkyard, sparked a May Day meeting of Fairbanksons to see what could be done about keeping the farm attractive to wildlife and for people. That little piece was actually written in 1967 by Bob Whedon in a little publication called Creamer's Dairy Demise Sparks Action. It was a bulletin that the Alaska Conservation Society was just beginning, and one of its founders was Ginny Wood. This morning, we're going to talk not about the entire Creamer's, well, we are going to talk about it, but recently, there has been another controversy sparked by a small section of that original Creamer package, and the issue that the amount of land that's involved in this controversy now is 9.98 acres. And we'll get to that because it has once again sparked controversy and grassroots involvement. With me in the studio today are Kathy Harms, who is a spokesperson for Fish and Game, and John Whitehead, who is a citizen that is very involved in this topic because he lives there and he cares very much about this piece of property.
Right.
I think for our audience's sake, we should go back and talk a little bit about the original purchase of this Creamer Dairyland property and fill our audience in about some of the history. I am going to really encourage phone calls today. Our number is 474-5044. If any of our listeners had participated in that original fundraising campaign to buy this Creamer's land, or have anything to add about that whole area in your memory stemming from, I guess, the late 60s, I please encourage you to call in and add your viewpoint of this, your remembrances. Last night I was at a party and I was talking to some friends, and everyone remembered the collecting funds. School children collected money to save the geese fields and to save the duck fields, and the whole community got involved. John, would you like to start and talk a little bit about just the history of that land and what was involved?
Well, I don't know much about the history, since I didn't come here till 1978, but from what I gather, when the Creamer's Field property was available for purchase, it was going to be bought by a private concern for development, and the people of Fairbanks did not want that to happen. There was the Fairbanks flood had taken place in August of 67, which had sort of thrown everyone for a loop as to how the state or the federal government might come up with funds to buy the land. And there was a cutoff date, I think sometime in December of 67, that if funds weren't available to buy the land for public use, it would be sold to a private organization. So I know what happened in Fairbanks was that the community rallied, the campfire girls had a cookie sale, and this was literally the nickels and dimes of little school children, which were contributed to accumulate a fund, I think, of about $5,000 or $6,000, which was then used as earnest money to secure the option on the land until the local Fairbanks legislative delegation, I think particularly Senator Butrovich and Senator Haglin, were then able to convince Governor Hickel to join forces so that the state appropriated about a fourth of the cost of the land, and the federal government, through a Pittman Robertson Wildlife Funds, contributed the other 75%. So after that took place, I think the earnest money was then given by the Alaska Conservation Society to the Creamers Field property to develop trails on it. So it
the
was
nature trail behind the barns, the 2-mile loop behind the barns, was built with what was originally the earnest money. And it's a real delightful place. It's neat to remember the efforts that went into saving the fields for the geese and ducks, because on the heels of one of the biggest disasters Fairbanks has ever gone through, people really wanted to save those fields for the geese and ducks.
That being the flood of 67.
Correct.
in this article that appeared in the Alaska Conservation Review, it says that the realtor said that the announced that the property was available on November 16th, was the first time the public heard about it, and it was going to be put up for sale on the 8th of December. Well, that's very little amount of time. It said that local stores contributed cake mixes to the Girl Scouts, and the Girl Scouts made the cakes and had bake sales
Girl
and went
Scouts,
door-to-door.
Boy Scouts, civic organizations, campfire, housewives, people who worked in businesses, everybody in Fairbanks was very concerned about making sure that the fields were safe for the geese. And it was just really a neat effort.
In fact, even at that time, there were multi-uses of that land. In this article that I just read this morning, it said there were dog mushers involved, and skiers, and of course bird watchers, and even some think ahead types who wanted to make a golf course there perhaps sometime in the future, which must have seemed a real odd idea in 67.
Yeah.
Probably so. By the way, right now most of the dog mushers trails are on what is now Creamer's Migratory Waterfowl Refuge. Most of the trails that are raced and the North American race is on and all those other things are on what is now the refuge. And so there's a tremendous amount of use by people who don't care about watching birds at all.
Okay, so that is the stage that was set, and obviously we have some precedent for citizen involvement in what happens to this land. Again, our number is 474-5044. If you would like to add to this discussion, because in fact this has become a very public discussion of this land use. What has happened recently that has caused people to come together and begin to discuss this again?
Perhaps I ought to mention what the department proposed to do. A few weeks back, or several months back, well, let me start right back at the original. When the money was obtained from both the legislature and the Pittman-Robertson Aid to Wildlife funds, what we wanted to purchase and what we could afford to purchase were two different things. We wanted to buy all of the fields and everything. We could not afford everything. We could not afford where Wedgwood Manor is right now, so we did not consider that piece. We could not afford a 12-acre inholding where the barns are. And so when the fields were originally purchased, the barns were owned by someone else. And that was a 12-acre piece right in the middle of the fields. At the time, during the sale, a 9.98-acre parcel on the south side of College Road was included. There was no mechanism in place to exclude it. It was not part of the lands that were aimed at for preserving for the geese, because no waterfowl habitat was present. However, when the purchase was made, the department realized that perhaps the best use of that land could be to consider to trade it or sell it in the future in order to get hold of the piece of land where the barns are.
Okay, that piece was part of Charlie Creamer's original dairy land, and then College Road happened to be built right through that corner. Is that...
And College Road wasn't exactly where it is today then.
Okay.
College Road's been relocated, I'm told, not by a great distance, but after the purchase, the road
was
relocated.
It was widened.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be a 2-lane road, and now it's a 4-lane road.
And that piece of land goes from the new Native Corporation Big Log Building across from Northern Lights and runs approximately to the House of Custom.
Yes, roughly, and then borders the slough.
And borders.
It's right around a half mile along College Road, just under a half mile, I believe.
Okay, before we go on, let's take this caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm Glenda Spain. I'm quite familiar with the situation. I've lived in Fairbanks since about 1946. 1947. I've been in Alaska since 1941. I happened to be on a fish and game board from 1966 to 1970 when this was transpiring. I'm very familiar with the whole thing, and I think somebody is mixing oranges and apples here. They're talking about the fields for the ducks and the geese and the crane. The area that we're discussing today, this 9.98 acres, isn't that at all. What it would be, if it is not allowed to be sold, would be a green belt for the people that border it there. And I assume that Mr. Whitehead has a property bordering this 9.98 acres. I don't know. I haven't heard him say, but I just assume that he does have. Now, it would be nice if everybody that lives in this country and wants a green belt around their place could have the government furnish one for them. But I have a green belt around my house because I bought enough land that I got a green belt around it. But I just can't understand the thinking of people. Well, I understand it, but I don't want to say it on the radio, that want to control more land than they own. And they use public sentiment. They want to save it for the ducks and the geese. Well, the ducks and the geese don't use this. And in fact, Kramer, what he used that area for was for baling gravel out of the slough and stockpiling it there. That's what it was. It was a gravel pit. And it has nothing to do with the ducks and the geese. Now, the other day on the TV, he was making the point that there's some ducks nest in there. There's ducks nest all over the country. But we got to have a place for people, too. You know, people are part of the ecology here, whether we like to admit it or not. When I listen to the people like him and Celia Hunter and this group, they think that man is trespassing on nature. Well, man is part of nature. That's my theory. And the people, when they bought Kramer's field, they weren't thinking about this little piece of ground over on the north side or the south side of the road there that was a gravel pit. They were thinking about where the ducks and the geese land. And the nature trails and all that is north of there. It has nothing to do with this at all. And if the Fish and Game Department hasn't any use for this land, for the purpose that the land was bought for, and they have a sale for it, and they can use that money to benefit wildlife throughout the state of Alaska, not only here, but it would benefit wildlife in Alaska, everybody would have a chance to benefit from that, from the increase in the benefit to the wildlife. I just don't understand the thinking of people that are opposed to any kind of development. I don't care. You propose development any place, and they're opposed to it. And Mr. Whitehead, I listened to him the other day on the TV, and he is one of the ones that is absolutely opposed to development. Now, if they want to develop someplace away from his place, maybe that would be all right. But he doesn't like the things along College Road. He doesn't like all of these buildings and these commercial developments. Well, people require development. They require facilities. And I just don't understand their reasoning.
Thank you very much. Actually, that I am really glad that you cleared that up. What I was trying to do is to put it in historical context and say, you know, that all of this land was originally part of Kramer's dairy. But you're quite right that the part that we're talking about now, the recent controversial land in question, is on the other side of the road.
And it has nothing to do with the where the birds rest or where the people go out and view the birds or walk on the nature trails. All it would do, if they can stop the sale of that land, it will create a green belt around their property. These 25 people have signed it, and I assume most of them have property adjoining.
Okay,
I think that's going at it in entirely the wrong way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your comments.
Thank you.
I'm going to allow Mr. Whitehead, who's here in the studio, to respond to those comments.
Yes, I hope Mr. Despain will understand my thinking. Yes, indeed, I am for greenbelt areas within the city of Fairbanks, because that is what people need. What the Fish and Game Division originally proposed, this is not, I understand, what they're proposing now, was to rezone. Now, I hope everyone will understand this. Rezone that land to Business One commercial property.
Not all of it, John.
Well, what's called Lot One, which is all the area on the side of on the what we'd call the college side of the bridge going into the Borough Park, and there's a smaller tract on the Lameda side of this. That would have been rezoned commercial property, then to be developed, one would imagine, in the way that other commercial property along College Road has been developed. Yes, I do live across from this property, but I would point out that the major property owner that lives across from this property is the Fairbanks North Star Borough. The bulk of that property on the other side of the slough is the Lions Recreation Park. So every person in Fairbanks who uses the Lions Recreation Park would have an interest in having a green belt border this recreation area. And yes, that is what I'm for. I'm for people.
Could I explain the original proposal? I think that would help people a lot if they're not tremendously familiar with it. Originally, the department had proposed to rezone approximately a little over half of the parcel to Business One, which is the most restrictive form of business zoning in the state, and the other portion of it to residential office, which is sort of a buffer zone between residential and business. Also, in the original proposal, the borough naturally has a 50-foot recreational corridor on both sides of Noyes Slough. So development could not go right up to the slough. And also, on the other boundaries, a 25-foot recreational corridor. That was the original proposal. So that has been withdrawn. At this point in time, it is not being made to the borough.
Okay. I'm going to take this caller first. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. This is Celia Hunter.
Hi, Celia.
I've had my name taken in vain already. Yes, I was very much involved with the original proposal for the creation of the Nature Center. And I think you ought to look at that in perspective, too, in that the only reason that we were able to carry out the drive to get the funds and the option to hold that land and eventually to get it purchased by the state. And I want to reiterate that the Department of Fish and Game was not in any way involved in that original transaction. They were given the custody of the land once it was purchased by the Pittman Roberts Fund.
To hold in trust
for
the people.
Then the Fish and Game Department was put in charge of maintaining it as a nature preserve. And the state of Alaska contributed 1,560 acres of the land directly behind the Creamer's Dairy to be added to the Nature Center. And so the whole thing is state land. And the Department of Fish and Game runs it. I think also that you have to realize that in 1968, with the discovery of oil at Prudhoe Bay and the subsequent frantic development that went on in Fairbanks, that we would not have had a prayer of holding that choice piece of real estate along College Road in a nature preserve. We got that area at probably the last moment that it was possible to get a large chunk of land as a green belt along College Road. And those of you who have lived here as long as Glenda Spain certainly realize what has gone on along College Road subsequently. And the development is intensive, and it is people-oriented. Naturally, you've got people with businesses, and we all go to the Northern Lights Nursery, and we all patronize businesses. But there is another aspect of human use that has become more prominent in more recent years as green belt has been disappearing around this community. And I think the development of Noyes Slough as a recreational waterway is one of the really great pluses in terms of both a tourist attraction. That's one of the major sources of income for people here in Fairbanks. That's outside money coming in, is the tourist buck. And we have very little for people to do around Fairbanks, and a waterway such as Noyes Slough can become. We're still in the process of trying to retrieve it from all the sewer and sewage and garbage that's been strewn there. And a pocket park along the edge of that is very, valuable, and it's valuable for human beings, and not just because a few ducks nest there, and it's valuable not merely to that, to the people who simply live in the vicinity, but it is of value to all the people in the whole North Star borough. And, you know, that's something that isn't pointed out. Everybody wants to say that the only thing that makes a buck is to have a service station or a grocery store or something like that. A green belt, which contributes to the tourist industry, is just as productive of dollars, which this borough desperately needs in terms of income from outside. And the other thing is that I think that this whole thing was dreamed up, and it probably, one of the reasons is that, well, the state of Alaska is losing money. We aren't losing that much money. We're still talking billions. And the Fish and Game Department has lost some of their income. They've lost some of their funding, and they're scratching around trying to find it. But the process by which they went through this, I have been talking to Juneau on this, and as far as I can find out, there was very little clearance between Juneau and Fairbanks. Fairbanks did not report. In fact, I don't think the people in the Fish and Game Department ran this past anybody before they proposed it. And I guess what they're proposing to do now is to have a series of public hearings on it. Well, it's kind of getting the cart after you're locking the door after the horse is stolen, because all of this could have been done ahead of time and found out what the other uses were. To turn this over to the borough as part of the Noise Slough Greenbelt would be great. 50 feet of buffer on either side of Noise Slough. Do you know how far 50 feet is? I'm sitting here in my living room and I'm looking down, and the trees closest to me are 100 feet away, and it's nothing. It is no distance at all, and it is not a buffer for a waterway. And I think that what we need to recognize, to get our values straight, that sure, you need development, but there are places where development can go, and there are places where it just shouldn't go. And along Noise Slough, and this is a particularly choice piece of land along Noise Slough, and I've driven along it, and I've looked at it. And as far as I'm concerned, the best use it can do is to add something to the green belt of Fairbanks. And Noise Slough is across College Road from Creamer's Dairy. And Creamer's Dairy is a mecca for a lot of people. And I think that this is something that is fully justified in terms of a park. It should go into the borough park. It should be part of our borough park system and part of our borough recreation system, which would benefit us financially, and it would benefit the people in this community enormously. Okay.
Thank you.
Any more questions you have on it? Why? I was there when it was done.
Okay. I really appreciate you continuing to listen, Celia. And so if we get into trouble again here, maybe you can call up and straighten us out. Okay, Kathy, I really want you to have an opportunity to respond to.
Well, I was right in the middle of explaining what had been proposed and what had been done. So anyway, when we received the buildings from the legislature, we bought the barns in 1981. At that point, we have only had one or two different ideas of what to do with the piece of land on the south side of College Road. We have not, it is not part of the Creamer's Migratory Waterfowl Refuge, Wildlife Refuge. It is not part of that. It was excluded from those boundaries with the original intent that perhaps we could sell it to get the barns. In 1981, we got the barns anyway.
Okay. So all of this land was originally part of Creamer's Dairy.
Correct.
But when land was designated as the wildlife
area,
which was 12 years later, the 9.9 acres that we are speaking of,
just under 10,
across the road, was not included in that.
It is not within the boundaries of Creamer's Refuge. Yeah, it is just a piece of state land that was originally part of Creamer's Dairy, which is currently owned by the state of Alaska and was purchased with state of Alaska funds and 3/4 of Pittman Robertson funds. And it is considered to be a piece of actually federal aid-owned land, for the most part. 25% is from the state of Alaska. So anyway, we have not done a terrific amount with this piece of land. It has sat there. It has not been particularly developed at all. The nature trail I mentioned is on Creamer's Refuge, and the attention, the management of the land in Fairbanks has been focused on the refuge. We have a sign-up sheet back at the Nature Trail, which I'm glad Celia brought up the point of tourism and what people enjoy. We've had people from, I believe, 49 states and I think maybe up to a dozen different foreign countries that come and enjoy the refuge. And I think saying that Creamer's refuge at least is a very important part of Fairbanks is an understatement. I think it's very important.
I saw yesterday the school buses are all there and the kids go and see all
the wildlife. We had received the barns and that 12-acre inholding with a purchase by the legislature in 1981. So this year, our division director, who is Lou Pamplin, he's the director of Game Division, talked with the man who is in charge of administering federal aid properties in the state of Alaska. They discussed the value of this particular piece of land to the integrity of the refuge and for the benefit of wildlife in the state. The habitat was assessed. There is wildlife habitat there. However, it's not critical or crucial to any particular species. Moose may wander through, but they wander through the yards there. There are birds that nest, such as chickadees and things like that. There are, it is not particularly critical habitat to any animal. It is habitat. I won't, you know, habitat, very similar. The animals that live in that particular parcel are rather similar to what lives in the yards of the people who live nearby. So anyway, they assess the biological needs, the habitat, and so forth. They evaluated it as to the benefits of wildlife and the users of wildlife, the people who enjoy the refuge and so forth, and felt that it was not critical and does not directly affect the people who use the refuge and the people who enjoy the wildlife of the refuge. And the decision was made to propose to sell it. Before it was going to be sold, it was proposed to be rezoned, and I explained the rezoning. A portion of it was to be residential office, the other portion to be business one. Neither of those are the most intensively business-zoned areas within the borough. Also, the recreational boundaries were proposed. At that point in time, a letter was drafted with an explanation of pretty much what we had intended to do, and that letter was hand-delivered to the houses which border the parcel.
Could I comment on that? Mm-hmm. I'm one of those houses, and mm-hmm. that letter was never delivered. The property mm-hmm. owners did not know of this rezoning until the borough sent out green forms.
Well, I can say that a staff member of the Department of Fish and Game and a staff member of the Fish and Wildlife Service, I believe, that monitors the federal aid money, walked door to door, and every household that was occupied at the time was spoken to and handed the letter, and the letter was left in the doors of the other houses on property which borders this parcel.
Well,
I can
maybe,
say that
maybe
happened.
Next time if Fish and Game would use the post office, there'd mm-hmm. be a more likelihood that the letters would be received.
There may be argument on that.
Patty, could I jump in here? I don't think it matters whether this piece of land is or isn't technically in the wildlife refuge, or does it matter which people within this agency talk to each other? I think what's important here is what the people of Fairbanks want done with this property.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a lot of people, and I think Celia expressed this. The people of Fairbanks view that property as their own. It doesn't belong, in their minds, to Fish and Game. And I think if the land were to be sold, that would be a decision of the people of Fairbanks. Now, I know the city's Urban Beautification Commission had tried for years to do something with this piece of property, to make it a pocket park along the slough. And they were, from what some of them have told me, thwarted because the state was undecided what it wanted to do with that land. So I think regardless of whether it's in the refuge or not, it borders an area which the borough has designated as the Noise Slough Recreation and Canoe Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And the land, of course, is a part of the habitat of the slough, which contains some of the most interesting wildlife examples in the borough with two very large beaver dams. And what I'd like to hear now is from the people of Fairbanks, what do they think should be done with this property? That's what matters, not what some bureaucrats said to each other.
Can I bring us up to date?
Certainly. And we have two phone callers, but I really do want Kathy to get through this chronology.
I'm still trying to figure out where we are. Explain where we are.
Okay,
so we had proposed to have it rezoned. We had proposed to sell it. Consequently, some people who are very concerned about the future of the piece of land have contacted Fish and Game in Juneau, and the proposal to rezone the land has been withdrawn, and the sale is not being pursued at this time. At this time, the department is considering a variety of different options of what to do with this land. The sale is one of those options. There are other options present. So at this time, the department is investigating what to do with this piece of property. And, of course, the department's concern is centered on wildlife and the future of wildlife, and also the people who enjoy the wildlife. It has been considered that this particular piece is not part of Creamer's Refuge, which is a major consideration, and also the Noyes Slough, as it exists, is not part of this piece of property. This borders Noyes Slough.
Okay. Has this public controversy, in fact, caused the department to reconsider?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Here, hello, you're on the air.
Hello. Yeah, this is Patty Whitehead, John's wife.
Uh-huh.
And I would just like to say that I can't understand why Fish and Game here in the Fairbanks office never contacted Juno in regard to their thoughts of this property in selling it. I can't quite grasp this. And maybe Kathy could explain this, why Fairbanks never contacted Juno to get permission or input or find out the rules and regulations of trying to rezone and sell a piece of property that they didn't own but were managing.
I would like to address that, absolutely.
Okay, thank you for your question, Patty.
We did not go off Fairbanks Fish and Game and decide to do this. Absolutely not. Our division director, Lou Pamplin, is in Anchorage. He was deeply involved with the process, and the Commissioner of Fish and Game was aware of the program and of the decision to pursue the sale. It was certainly not something done that was done just by Fairbanks. The entire Department of Fish and Game, the officials involved, were aware of the process. Absolutely.
Well, that doesn't seem to be coming down to the rest of us. And now we're being told that we're going to have public input.
Mm-hmm.
Who is going to do that public input? Do you think Fish and Game should be in charge of this public input?
I don't believe any formal plans have been made for exactly how to conduct the public input at this point in time, since we have no deadlines in mind. We are not pursuing anything at this time. We are more than willing to discuss this issue with anyone who wants to, and plans will be made in the future and finalized as to exactly how and when and where public input will be collected. And that has not been decided at this time.
Well, let me just say this, that I personally feel that since it's become such a hot issue, and Fish and Game is obviously on one side, and property owners, not just property owners along this strip of land, but other people as well in Fairbanks are concerned, I think that we should really have community organizations, and I think involved, and I think that they should do the study.
I think that's really good input. I think that's something that we need to consider when we are going to be considering exactly how to go about collecting public input. And if you would like to stop by and talk with either me or perhaps the regional supervisor in Fairbanks or any of the other officials of Fish and Game in the rest of the state, I'm sure we'd be more than willing to take your ideas and consider them. Absolutely.
Well, I don't want to just be considered. I'm quite serious in saying that. I don't feel that Fish and Game is capable of being fair at this point on this issue, because on the TV the other day, it was brought out, just the economics of it was brought out, that if this was rezoned and if this property was sold, only 15% of the total earnings from the property may go to Fish and Game.
Okay.
And the economics of it just doesn't make any sense. And in some of my research, Bill Martin had said that who's with the Pittman Robertson Fund, said he was well aware, thought it was a good idea, and that it had been mentioned to him that Fish and Game in Fairbanks would like to buy other parcels of land on the north side of the slough. Well, there are other pieces of land over there, and I'm sure that they probably will come for sale, but why give up one piece that you already own, not you, but the state owns, to buy something else that, due to inflation and time, has just skyrocketed?
Okay. Thank you. And if you're willing, Patty, I'd like to move on because I have other callers on the line, and I'll let Kathy answer that.
Thank you.
All right, okay. You're welcome. Thank you.
I haven't spoken with Bill Martin, so I don't know exactly what he was referring to. I would like to address what you mentioned about the economics of it. If the land is to be sold, then 25% of the total money received for the land will revert to the general fund of the state of Alaska. That will not necessarily go anywhere. It's up to the legislature where that goes.
What kind of figure are we talking about?
It could be anywhere up to a little over $1.5 million. Up to that much. We don't know yet.
That is the total price of the piece.
It has been appraised at up to $1.7 million. However, the final sale price would be...
As business property.
If it was rezoned.
Yes.
Yes, as if it were rezoned. The final sale, of course, would depend on the highest bidder. We don't know what that would be. We would have no control. 75% of that sale price would revert to the Pittman-Robertson funds and would be used for wildlife management within the state of Alaska by the Department of Fish and Game.
But not necessarily in Fairbanks.
However, no, absolutely. There's no guarantee of where that money would go.
Okay.
Our division director, Lou Pamplin, when considering the issue, had agreed to budget for Creamer's Field Refuge in the amount that over a five-year period, Creamer's budget would reflect 15% of the sale. Now, this is not a legal commitment. It is nothing in writing. No state official has the legal right to commit money. However, he has agreed that the department would decide to budget for Creamer's Field so that over a five-year period, it would reflect 15% of the money which was reverted to the PR fund. So Creamer's Refuge would benefit in that way, and we do have several things over the next 5 years that we would like to be able to do to improve Creamer's Refuge, to allow for more human use and to help wildlife habitat. At the stage we are at right now, with what we can look forward to, at this point in time, we will be on a maintenance or lower level for managing Creamer's Refuge without some other source of income. So that's where we are right now. That's why the decisions that led us to pursue the sale, once again, I must refresh everyone's memory. The sale is not being pursued at this time. It is but one of many options that are being considered.
Okay. Hello. We have another caller. You're on the air. Do you have a question? Hello? Hello?
My name is Ginny Wood.
Mm-hmm.
And
hi, Ginny.
I'd like to make a comment. I was around, too, at the time when we got Creamer's Dairy, and I was editor of the Alaska Conservation Bulletin at that time. I would like to suggest that when we're talking about habitat and whether we have habitat there for wildlife, and Glenn was talking about habitat for people, and I agree that we need more habitat for people, but maybe not in just condominiums or businesses that would go there. What I would like to see is a little pocket park that maybe has some picnic tables. You go down to Creamer's Dairy to watch the ducks and geese, and you don't want to crawl into the fence and go out and disturb anything going on or get in the way of people taking pictures. I ride down on my bike. I'd love to have a little place across the street that I could go on my bicycle and eat my lunch and then maybe go back and watch the geese again. And I think that if they had that for a canoe area, if they ever can get that cleaned up, which I think would be a great idea, then there would be a little pocket park where it would be used. It wouldn't be for animals. No, it's for people. But a place where you can get away from all the suburbia that's growing up, where all the business, you know, you just come home from town going grrr because it's you just see nothing. But you know, and that's fine. That's what towns are for. But why not a little pocket park that would just be a place you can take your kids over and let them play when they're little toddlers that don't want to look at ducks, or just a place that you're out looking across at that beautiful dairy country and all that nice open space. And so I do think we need a place that has habitat for people, but in a park, not in a parking lot. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jenny. Have another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, or morning. I'm from the East Coast. I'm from New York. And in about early 1800s, somebody decided that, boy, this farm would make a nice place. And right now people are enjoying Central Park. Farmer's Loop is soon to become a four-lane. The geese, the ducks, they land at the field. That's one of the main attractions for it. You put stuff around it real tight, and how many people have ducks and geese landing in their backyard. That field is small enough as it is. If Fish and Game was into management of wildlife, they'd take a real good look at the resource they have, the public support that they're getting by all those people going right there next to their facility in the interior, seeing what they're supposed to be managing, looking over to the left and seeing the building and saying, a good job here. You lose that, and Fish and Game is going to lose a tremendous amount of support, because what's going to happen is it's going to become a controversial issue as to simple management of another bureaucratic agency of the state, and with funding cuts and the state of Alaska looking at its own version of a Proposition 13 or whatever. It's a good way to slit your throat, Fish and Game, by taking something like that that was started with public support, has great public relations potential. I hear you saying that it is other options. It would be wise, in my opinion, for Fish and Game at this time to make a statement that no, they are not going to get rid of any of that realty, and if anything, they are looking at purchasing more adjacent to it. I know I've supported Fish and Game for 15 years. I'm one vote, but if you lose that one, you're sure going to lose mine. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Could I make one more quick comment?
Certainly can.
Ideally, I would have to agree with everyone. If money were no object, there is no way we would consider getting rid of any land that is potentially habitat. This piece of land, to relate it to waterfowl, to make it waterfowl habitat and increase the amount of waterfowl habitat available, chances are something drastic would like to happen, have to happen, such as getting rid of all the trees on it. To make it waterfowl habitat, it will not be that way with trees on it. Ideally, with money being no object, we would love to have this and a lot of other pieces of land. Financially, we have to consider the fact that we cannot afford more at this point in time. If money were to drop out of the sky, we would be absolutely delighted. That's just
Let me say a quick word to that. I've been going to legislative teleconferences, talking with Senator Fahrenkamp. I don't know how much money I've spent on long-distance phone calls to Juneau. If what you need is money, why don't you come out and say that? And I'll go down and ask Senator Fahrenkamp, instead of asking your commissioner to block this sale, to put it in the capital budget. I'll phone, we certainly wouldn't stand in your way. Yeah, but why don't you propose that to the city instead of saying the way we have to get money is to sell property?
Okay. We have somebody else who would like to comment. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hello, my name is Steve Mack, and I've got an interest in this. I live about a block away from the Aurora side of the parcel, and I echo all of John's comments about why we don't want it sold. But the thing I wanted to comment on this morning is it's incredible to me, after all this time that this controversy has been going on, is how Fish and Game is just butting their heads against the wall, insisting about how they need the money to improve Kramer's Field and so on, and missing what a great public relations benefit they would achieve by just going with the flow on this. They've got just a lot of comment on how people want it to stay public land, but they keep saying how selling it will improve, they can use the money to improve the stuff on the other side of the road. And there's through this controversy, people are still upset that they put their building in the middle of the waterfowl area, that they took part of Kramer's Field to put up building and store supplies and equipment and so on, and now they're going against the public again and trying to sell off this land. If they just go with the flow, they could win a lot of friends instead of making enemies. That's all I wanted to say this morning.
Thank you very much for your comment. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I do.
That's all I wanted to say this morning.
Thank you very much for your comment. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd just like to make one comment. And I think Fairbanks needs an organization along the lines of Ducks Unlimited or Audubon Society, something that's totally separate from, from the public, from the state or from any kind of the borough or anything like that. When something like this comes up, they need to just be able to buy it and just eliminate all this controversy and the public wants this, the public wants that, and just come up with the cash, buy it, and that'll be the end of it. And they can call the shots on it, however they see it, however they want.
You're asking that that an organization like that would have first option?
No, competitive bids, just like everyone else.
Uh-huh.
But it would save so much controversy. And it would, if there's so much support, you know, it sounds like there is. It sounds like there's a lot of people that would actively support a private organization like that. And it, just get it right away from the state and everything and own it. And, you know, it'd be so much easier. What do you think?
I wouldn't have any problem with that. I think that there are several different organizations that specifically do buy land to maintain
right.
it as wildlife habitat. Ducks Unlimited is one. I believe the Nature Conservancy is another. I believe there's another one. I can't remember the name of it. If a sale is to be proposed, is to be considered, and is going to be decided upon, I would personally greatly support that type of thing, as not as an employee of the Department of Fish and Game, but as a member of society.
Yeah, it's real hard to say, you
absolutely.
Know, what the public wants. There are certain parts of the public that you hear from,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's real hard to, I don't know how you ever assess what the public says. You know, that's a real,
that's
real vague
true.
Thing.
I think that's a real valid idea. However, I must one more time say that we don't know that a sale is going to be the end result. It certainly could. It is one of the options that is being considered. The criteria of what the different options will be considered according to has not been officially finalized yet. It will have a lot to do with what benefits wildlife and what benefits the people who use wildlife, but we have no final criteria of what's going to happen yet.
And no mechanism set up formally for public input.
But we have no deadline either, so
right.
we are in the process of setting that up.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments. That's a good idea. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Steve Mack again. It's just incredible. What I'm hearing this fish and game person say, I'm sorry to take up other people's time, and I'll be real brief, but those private organizations buy land from private people to get it into the public use. They don't buy it from public agencies so they can use it for another public use, and which is currently being used. It's just incredible, the thinking that's going on in Fish and Game's mind. There are ways that they could give that land to the borough. If the right people wanted to do it, it could be done. Instead of trying to sell it, they should be thinking of ways of, if they don't want to manage it, give it to the borough who will manage it, you know, and get it out of their hands. But I know they're upsetting me and upsetting a lot of other people I talk to, just trying to pursue this this thing of selling the land. That they, what I hear from the people I talk to is they want this year to die down and then sell it in 2 or 3 years when there's different people around. But we'll still be here. And
you bet.
And I just hope we can get it back to the get it over to the borough or something. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me just say, I like that idea of Ducks Unlimited buying it, but the people of Fairbanks bought that land once. Do they have to buy it twice?
The people of Fairbanks didn't buy that piece of land, John. They bought the option to buy.
The land was paid for,
three-quarters of it, by Pittman Robertson Federal Aid to Wildlife money. And as the landowners, we don't have complete say over how we can do that. The PR people, the people who are administering PR funds and ownership of lands, have a tremendous amount of say of what will happen to that piece of property, and it's not something that we can arbitrarily decide what to do with.
Oh.
And I did say that originally when the proposal was made to sell it, it was on the advice of the man who administers that. So we are certainly considering public input, but we do not have final say over what to do that piece of land.
And no federal bureaucrat owns the land. You and me, we are the United States. We are the state of Alaska, and we bought that land for the public.
Well,
not for an agency.
The people throughout the United States who paid for ammunition and firearms bought three-quarters of it.
Yeah, and I wonder if they want to, what they want to do about it.
Okay, we have some people. There's more of us out here. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
I would like to know why they want a pocket park across a four-lane highway from a 1,700-acre park and across the slough from a park owned by the borough already. And why would anyone want to take their children on a picnic right next to a four-lane highway? Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
I'd just like to say this idea that the state of Alaska has all these millions and millions of dollars. If you watch the Capitol news every day, you find out that we've had severe budget cuts, and some hard decisions are going to have to be made by the people in the state about where they want their money to go and how they want it to be spent. And just saying, Mr. Whitehead just saying, well, I'll just call Betty Fahrenkamp and she'll get us an appropriation in the capital budget. That's sheer nonsense. The state of Alaska's funds have been decreasing radically this year. And if Fish and Game has to make decisions about where this money is going to come from to operate in the manner that they have deemed best, then that's what their job is to do.
Thank you for that comment.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any questions of either of my guests here?
I'm not quite sure where the money would go if it was sold for $1.5 million. Where would that money? What would happen with that money? I wasn't quite clear on that.
Okay. Okay. Some of this is confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy, would you answer that question? Thank you for your call.
Uh-huh.
If the option of what to do with the piece of the land is chosen to sell the piece of land, as was originally proposed, 75% of the money received, and we don't know exactly how much it would be, it would depend on the highest bidder, but 75% of that money would go to the Pittman-Robertson Federal Aid Funds for Wildlife Management within the state of Alaska. 25% would revert to the general fund of the state of Alaska. The 25%, of course, in the general fund, the Department of Fish and Game has no control over. Some of it may revert to Fish and Game in budget, some of it may not. We don't know. The 75% would be used by the department, especially the Division of Game, but also other divisions, for wildlife management within the state of Alaska. And our director had agreed to budget for Creamer's Refuge, Creamer's Migratory Waterfowl Refuge, so that over 5 years it would reflect 15% of the total price that was reverted to the PR funds. This is not in writing. It is not a legal contract. It is nothing that is guaranteed. However, it does show the intentions of the Department of Fish and Game to budget for Creamer's Refuge. And when you consider all of the different wildlife management projects that the department has throughout the state, Creamer's, quite frankly, even though it's near and dear to the hearts of the people in Fairbanks, it is not one of the highest priorities throughout the state of Alaska for wildlife management. If there are a lot of different pieces of land that are owned by the state of Alaska for wildlife and are managed by the Department of Fish and Game, if you have to go by the number of people who depend upon it, Potter's Marsh, south of Anchorage, has a lot more people living next to it. So Creamer's is very, very important to the people who live here. But on a statewide basis, considering all the responsibilities of the Department of Fish and Game, it is not one of the highest priorities, and an intent to budget so that 15% of the sale price shows up is, 15% sounds like not a great deal. Well, that's true. It's not a great deal, but it would provide for the things we would like to do to develop Creamer's over the next 5 years. There are many different things that we have considered doing that we do not have funds to do right now. Right. Everything from having more lakes involved on the north side to encourage nesting, as well as providing access to the refuge, the 1,700-acre refuge from the Farmer's Loop side, possibly another nature trail, possibly some outhouses or whatever along the nature trail, a lot of different things, and also clearing the fields to expand them. There, some of the fields, the waterfowl habitat, are being encroached on by willows. Clearing it is something we can't even afford to do right now. So if the sale is pursued as something, as opposed to any of the other options that will be considered, Creamer's Refuge would benefit.
Let me just jump in here 1 minute. One of the great joys of living in Alaska is the receptivity of our legislators to the wishes of the people. Now, it's not nonsense to ask your legislator for an appropriation. And I think if you just look at the News Miner, I think it was Thursday night, the list of interior projects in the capital budget that have come out. I know that some of those had to do with a group that I belong with to support the University of Alaska Museum. We ask the legislature for additional appropriations, and we get them. I saw some appropriations in that budget for Fish and Game. This is one of the great things about this state, is that people can get together and ask their government to support them. And oil dollars are going down, but we still have a responsive state government.
Hello, you're on the air. I want to get all these phone calls in. Yes, hello.
I'll try to keep my comments brief. It's very fascinating and also frustrating to listen to your discussion. It may be reality, but I guess one of the things that really saddens and discourages me is to hear all these, you know, budget figures and percentages and monetary needs and monetary figures and calculations and estimations thrown around. I think it's hard to put a monetary worth on a piece of land, particularly this one that's being talked about. I think, as has been mentioned, it's not only valuable to the wildlife, but it's valuable to the people. It's the people's land as well as the land for the wildlife. And a caller just a few minutes ago mentioned, why would we want a park? Why would we want an open piece of land near a busy thoroughfare? Well, anywhere you go now in Fairbanks, you're seeing potential open, nice land built up with new malls or built up with new housing development. And why would we want some open space? Is that if we don't leave some open space, we're not going to have any open space. And I'd like Fish and Game to please consider preserving this land, what little open land we have left, to enjoy, even if it is by a busy thoroughfare. We need to be reminded of the tradition, the heritage of this state, and the heritage of the land. This wasn't originally ours, this was originally the natives. And this may be getting on a tangent, but I have recently become very respectful of the native community and the fact native community in the state, which the original inhabitants, their heritage is in the land of the state. And I think, sure, tossing out the reality of the monetary figures and needs is important, but I hope that you will listen to the community, and clearly the community seems to be saying that, please don't sell this land. We want this land to be preserved.
Thank you for your comments.
We are certainly wanting to hear from the community, and like I said, the decisions of exactly how to how, when, where, and so forth that public input will be collected have not been finalized. But in the meantime, until we decide exactly how and when and where and so forth to collect public input, we are more than willing to talk to you now. And if you would like to, I will make notes of your comments now. And if one of the options that will be considered, of course, is going to be to retain the land, I have no way of predicting right now what will happen, but I do thank you for your input, and your comments will be considered.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Oh, hi. I didn't know I was back on here. I'd like to talk to the gentleman there that objected to buying public property that already was public property or something like that.
That was a caller we had. Yes?
Hello?
Yes?
Aren't you assuming that the public all feels the same way? I mean, how can you object to a local organization that has an interest, you know, spelled out clearly in wildlife and green belts and all that, a local organization, I don't mean a national organization, mm-hmm. How can you object to a local organization like that that's supported by people who live there and enjoy the place and everything else, purchasing land like that? How can you object to that?
That comment was made by a caller, mm-hmm. And so I don't think any of us here in the studio can answer for him.
The one guy there in the studio thought that the public should, we already own it, people. You know, he kept talking, we, us, the people, we already own it, you know, why should we buy it again? But isn't he assuming that all the people are agreeing with him when he says that?
I don't think so. I wouldn't object to a private group buying it. All I'm saying is that it was bought once by the people of Fairbanks for the same intent that Ducks Unlimited might want to buy it. It was bought for nature and wildlife preservation and put in the trust of an agency that stated it would do exactly that. So I don't think we're saying that the general public bought it for
any number of possible uses. The general public bought it with a rather specific use in mind, which I would gather is the same use that private organizations you're mentioning have in mind, too. So it's not an objection. It's just saying, sounds like this public group is in tune with your private group, and buying it once is enough.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time for today. Obviously, thank you for your call. Obviously, this is something that we can't resolve in this forum, and it is an issue that needs a lot more public input. It sounds like Fish and Game is willing to hear from the people of Fairbanks. I don't suppose there's any issue that all of us are going to agree on. We aren't of one mind, but I think it's wonderful that this process is ongoing and that everybody is going to have an opportunity to speak to it. I thank you very much, Kathy Harms, spokesperson for Fish and Game, and John Whitehead, for joining me in the studio today. And I hope that all of you who have, that this conversation has sparked an interest, that you will, in fact, participate when the process is announced. Thank you very much. I've been your host, Patty Kostelic. Our executive producer has been Carla Tonella, and have a very nice weekend.